Searching for the perfect Mother's Day present? Try Sophyto Pro. That's Sophyto Pro, a natural skincare system now available exclusively through doctors and featured this month at the Hoffman Center store. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is now April, and it is now spring, and it's beautiful outside. I just took a walk through Midtown Manhattan. Everybody's got a nice smile on their face as they're enjoying warmer temperatures, but T.S. Eliot once said, April is the cruelest month, and there are additional stresses as the temperature improves, because now we got to start thinking about summer vacations, and maybe the kids are coming home from school, and we got to start clearing all the detritus from the yard. And life changes profoundly in April. It may even accelerate for a lot of people. Did you know that April is National Stress Awareness Month? And for that reason, we've invited an expert. She's Dr. Mae Shunney. She's a naturopathic physician who's based in a mellow part of the country, Santa Cruz, California, where they seem to do a pretty good job dealing with stress. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the physiology of stress and provide us with some strategies for dealing with stress. She specializes in women's health, functional endocrinology, and family medicine. She also is co-host of her own weekly radio program entitled Green Tea and Honey. It's a program about integrated medicine and food, and she is also a spokesperson for Nordic Naturals, one of our great sponsors, the makers of high-quality omega-3 products. So without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Mae Shunney. How are you, Dr. Shunney?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I actually, you know, grew up in your neck of the woods over there, which is where I honed my stress management skills.
Well, absolutely. So you really decompressed by going out to the West Coast.
Santa
Cruz.
I did.
Santa Cruz is, you know, when I go out there, I just kind of go, exhale, you know, and instantaneously it drops my stress levels just to be out there.
It is. It's lovely.
So, but tell us a little bit about the nature of stress. And what's going on when we're affected with stress?
Well, you know, I mean, if there's one thing that I see that's similar in pretty much all of my patients, it's that stress is impacting them on some profound level. And particularly if I'm willing to take the time to ask the right questions, then I'm really going to hear about stress, how stress is impacting everybody. So very few of us are immune to the effects of stress. And of course, the science continues to show us how stress can negatively impact health. You know, basically, when we're under stress, when we perceive that we are under stress, you know, there is a chemical cascade, which is basically preparing us to escape from the saber-toothed tiger. I mean, it's an evolutionary imperative that primes us and chemically gets us ready to run further, faster, and get more oxygen into our lungs and dilate our pupils and get further down the field and up into the tree quick enough so that the saber-toothed tiger will not beat us there and will not have us for dinner, and then, of course, we'll get bored and go away. But that, you know, that evolutionary preparation, you know, to get us up into that tree, these days we kind of have a constant saber-toothed tiger that's always running us around. And so all of those stress hormones and those stress chemicals, which prepare us for that kind of fight or flight, that kind of physical endeavor, they still get made and they still get produced. But then they stay high for long periods of time, because for many of us, we just have this chronic stress that goes on and on and on and on. Those chemicals never come back to baseline. And of course, what we learn is that when those chemicals are high, we start to have issues with blood sugar balance, and we start to have issues with inflammation and heart health, and it impacts our mood, and it impacts our cognition and our immune system, and, you know, virtually every aspect of our health. So while teaching people to reduce stress or telling people that they must reduce their stress can kind of be a useless thing to tell people. I do think that spending time with patients and helping them to manage the stress that they have better is an incredibly worthwhile practice and can really go far to help people reach optimal health.
Yeah, we can go a lot of different directions on this theme, but it appears that there are external stressors, such as the saber-toothed tiger, or in more modern settings, our boss, our spouses, the traffic jam that we encounter, or the tax bill that's due. And these are unremitting stresses, so it's a little hard to go on the attack or flee. It's just not proper office etiquette to run around in circles and start screaming or, you know, climb a tree. Even in Santa Cruz.
Certainly
in New York, where there are very few trees. So, but there are these external stressors, but also it appears that there are things that can make us more stressed that are not external circumstances, which we have very little control over, that maybe we can get a handle on.
Absolutely. And I, you know, certainly food is a great example of that. You know, when we have adverse reactions to foods, food allergies, food sensitivities, when we're eating nutrient-depleted food, when we're not getting the nutrition we need, these are things that are stressful to our bodies. And so, of course, looking at nutrition is really important when we're looking to manage stress, not only because we don't want to add any more stress to the body, but because when we eat properly and when we eat good nutrition, we're actually giving our body tools with which we can better manage the stress that we have. So it's a win-win when we take a closer look at nutrition.
So the actual chemicals in question are chemicals with names like cortisol, and adrenaline. Everybody knows what adrenaline is. All the car ads we see promise to stoke our adrenaline, but maybe that's not so good. Or maybe that five-hour energy drink that we're going to take, you know, that's at the drugstore counter, that's going to increase our adrenaline. But these actually may have devastating effects on our system long-term, on our brain, as you said, on our immune system, on our hearts, our circulatory systems. So describe some of those effects.
Yeah, because when it's all about balance, right? I mean, our sympathetic nervous system, this is the part of our nervous system that is designed to help us freeze, flee, or fight, to basically be able to respond to danger. You know, we need that adrenaline, we need that cortisol to be able to do that. But we also have another part of our nervous system, which is our parasympathetic nervous system, which helps us to be calm, which helps us to regenerate, which helps us to heal, which helps us to digest. And of course, we have important chemicals that we make that control appetite and satiety and hormone balance and mood, which are suppressed when our sympathetic nervous system is activated. And we actually need those chemicals to come down so that we can make some of these other things which enhance our mood and enhance our libido and make us know when we need to stop eating. And if we're going all the time, those other things don't really get made in the same way. So it's this balance between the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system and our society. I mean, the way in which we're driven and the way in which we go, I mean, we are in sympathetic overdrive. And so we need to work hard, without stressing ourselves out more, to really, support, prioritize, creating time to grow this parasympathetic nervous system and to do activities and eat properly and have our relationships and sleep well and do the things that are going to help balance so that we're really getting both sides of the coin when it comes to having enough stress hormones to function well and then having enough of the other chemicals in our body that decrease inflammation, help us relax, help us connect, help us heal, etc.
Well, let's go back to, both of us went to medical school, so let's go back to some of our early physiology lessons where we, as you mentioned, talked about the autonomic nervous system. That's the part of our nervous system that's involuntary. It, to some extent, experienced meditators and yogis can control their heart rate, their blood pressure. They can do remarkable things, their breathing. But the average person is sort of at the mercy of their autonomic nervous system. Why don't we go from the top of our head down to maybe the bottom of our feet and talk about what happens to our various systems when we're in sympathetic overdrive? I guess we could start with the brain, since that's on top. What happens to the brain when the brain is subject to a sympathetic overload?
Well, you know, we get this surge of cortisol and adrenaline, you know, which again is kind of telling us that there is a danger and equipping us to kind of physically be able to manage that. So, you know, the pupils are dilating, our blood vessels are opening, heart can pump more, stronger, we can get more oxygen into our lungs, we get blood going into our peripheral muscles, arms, and legs, so we can run further, faster. You know, again, it's kind of preparing us for this long haul down the field to escape a potential predator. And of course, those chemicals are also impacting, you know, our mood. We get very focused. We're kind of in survival mode. We're not digesting. We're not healing.
We're probably also suffering from erectile dysfunction, or
for sure,
or sexual problems in women, because who needs sex when you're trying to flee a saber-toothed tiger? You know, so your body
exactly.
kind of shuts that function down. So, you know, certainly that could be at the root of many sexual problems as well.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think that, you know, basically we're in survival mode, and, you know, things like sex, digestion, healing, connecting, you know, none of these things are a priority when you're fleeing, when you're in survival mode. You know, so it's kind of interesting. And then, gosh, I mean, we know what just popped into my head was then you put all of this electronic stimuli, you know, that's on us all the time, you know, with emails and texting and phone calls and how connected we are. I mean, it's really difficult to get out of that space and into this quieter space where we can do some of these other things.
You know, and each email is a little bit of a surge of adrenaline.
Totally.
That adds to our...
Every time the little bing comes up
exactly.
that you've got a text. Yeah,
it drives me nuts. I mean, it just.
Yeah.
But you know, these little devices are so pervasive, and they're constantly reminding us of our responsibilities. You know, sometimes bad news travels fast.
Exactly, and you just don't stop. You know, it's just hard to stop. You have to really be very active in stopping, because you can't escape it.
So long term, you know, if we look at cortisol is a little bit like prednisone. Prednisone,
right.
A synthetic drug that is great short-term for quelling inflammation, but long-term has horrible side effects.
Sure.
It can make your blood sugar go up, make you diabetic. Describe some of the other long-term effects of cortisol. Osteoporosis is a side effect of prednisone, probably also cortisol.
Right, exactly. And, you know, like you said, cortisol in small amounts when we need it is great. It's anti-inflammatory. It's a natural painkiller. It helps us burn energy so we have fuel right away. I mean, these are all, you know, see clearly, think clearly. These are all great things short term, just like prednisone as a drug can be a wonderful, miraculous thing short term. Problem is when we take these things long term, we start to have blood sugar issues. You know, we start to have trouble burning fuel properly, and we actually start to put weight on. We start to be impacted. Our immune system start to be impacted. We start catching every cold and flu that comes up. We start to kind of reverse our sleep-wake cycle. So we're tired, but we're wired. So we have trouble sleeping. We're awake at night having trouble sleeping, and then we're exhausted all day long. You know, and then, of course, any pain that we have, we lose that natural pain-fighting ability, and we start to have, you know, more pain and more inflammation.
And there's actually some evidence that when it comes to the brain, high levels of cortisol may literally shrink the part of the brain, the hippocampus, that's responsible for memory. So clearly we want to, you know, we can't afford the luxury of those harmful thoughts that raise our cortisol all the time.
No, and that's so interesting, isn't it? Because when we are in that sympathetic overdrive, we are so narrowly focused, like in one area with our brain. It's almost like everything else atrophies and goes away.
Right, and that's another thing that I often see a lot of patients who are, you know, they're of a certain age, whether that age is 45 or 55 or 62. And in my opinion, they're not suffering from Alzheimer's disease, but they're concerned that their memory and focus is dwindling. And often it is it's the result of stress, because I notice that when I do my radio program, and I'm sure you as a broadcaster know this, if you're stressed and distracted, not in the zone, you're less good at pulling up facts and having a very wide-ranging conversation. And mm-hmm. so being in a relaxed place enables you to have more mental acuity, and sometimes people just feel brain dead when they're subject to very high levels of stress.
Yeah, I agree, and I see that in my patients too. I mean, 45 to 65 is a big bulk of my population, and people are very concerned about memory and clarity of thinking and cognition, and I agree. You know, so for me, in my practice, I do a lot of hormone balancing, and so you know that can look like, you know, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, those kinds of things. But for me, I do a tremendous amount of adrenal testing and focusing on adrenal support as well, because the adrenals, of course, being the part of the endocrine system that help manage your stress response, among other things, you know, for me, it's part and parcel of hormone balancing. You know, to just take, let's say, a woman of a certain age and look at estrogen and progesterone to help her feel better, to me, is really negligent, considering that part of what you're seeing at that same age is the culmination of decades of what's, you know, probably a decent amount of stress,
right.
And the effects of that, and they all feed in together. I mean, the endocrine system is like a symphony. You know, you can't just tune up your percussion or tune up your horns. I mean, you really have to look at how everybody's doing.
And how do you give patients a report card on their adrenals or on their cortisol or on their maybe a stress rating? Where are they
sure.
on the scale?
Well, I like to test them. You know, salivary testing for cortisol has actually been validated to be just as accurate as blood. And, mm-hmm. Of course, the lovely thing about saliva is that you can actually check it multiple times over the day, because who wants to get their blood drawn four times during the day, including once at bedtime? And so if you get these saliva collections, specimens over the course of the day, you can actually kind of look at this natural curve. Cortisol should be its highest in the morning. It's kind of your peak cortisol output when you get ready to go, you know, to kind of embrace your day and jump on board. And then by noon, we've got this adaptive cortisol level. Okay, what happened when the first half of your day actually hit? Where's your cortisol level look? And then it should kind of keep kind of quietly descending downwards through the afternoon, and then the evening be at its lowest of the day, so you can mm-hmm. have a restful, recuperative sleep. And sometimes I see that. Sometimes I see a low, flat line where somebody's totally depleted all day. Sometimes I see them high all day. Sometimes I see a reverse curve where they're actually their lowest in the morning when they should be their highest, and then their highest at night, which helps mm-hmm. to explain why they're not sleeping. So I find that test to be incredibly useful. And then, you know, I use a lot of dietary and lifestyle intervention. I talk to them about diet. There are certain nutrients that I think can be useful, certain herbs that I like to use, you know, and kind of put that together again, and looking at exercise and looking at sleep. And I look a lot with people at relationship and self-care and these kinds of things too, to try to pull the whole piece together, and then use hormones if I need to use hormones. But sometimes I don't have to when I put the other stuff in place first.
Okay, this is a logical place for us to take a small break. This is part one of our conversation with Dr. Aimé Shunney, who is a naturopathic physician in California who specializes in women's endocrine problems, but is also an expert on stress. April is National Stress Awareness Month. And in part two of our conversation with Dr. Shunney, we're going to talk about some practical tips for lowering your stress level this stressed out April and for the rest of the year. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.